This is John Williams, and throughout the show so far, we've been talking a little bit about the dilemma one of our listeners faced. They went to the Brooks and Dunn concert, and the people in front of them were standing, and when they asked them to sit, they wouldn't, and they couldn't see the show. Nobody else hardly was standing, but this one group did. The people behind them didn't want to stand up, so they had to just wrestle with it. And finally, the people whose view was obstructed got up and left. I don't know where they went, but they gave up their seats either to walk out of the concert or try and find some place where they could see the show without themselves standing up. So what do you do about that? 847 said, I had a normal-sized family with a Sasquatch-sized dad in front of us. They stood and danced the entire concert. The dad was so large, the people behind us were complaining. They couldn't see. He didn't care. If you're that big, be considerate of those behind you. At the very least, move to the furthest seat of your group. But he was front and center. And as we were leaving, I said to my husband, why didn't you say something to that guy? And his response was, he's my client. John, about standing at concerts, another all about me example. It's like asking for airplane window seats that someone else has paid for, or littering, or expecting someone else to pick up the trash. We don't know how to behave anymore. I scored great seats to see Lady Gaga in September, and I fully expect to be standing and dancing the entire concert.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet.
Well, that's the thing, and I'm going to bring Eric Zorn into this conversation. Bob Kessler, Eric is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. Eric, you're a musician, and you go to a lot of shows, I think, but it just depends on the show. If you're going to Gaga, if you're going to Adele, John once said, this is a concert, stand up, dance, enjoy the moment. If you're going to Taylor Swift, what do you think? But if you're going to Paul McCartney, Billy Joel, Elton John, the Eagles, you know what I'm saying?
Where the fans have bad knees and can't stand up the whole time, but look over the people who are standing in front of them.
And then I do think that I think the band needs to make a statement, or needs to be printed in the program or the ticket. And I think the venue needs to take some responsibility, too. I don't like you all just settle it amongst yourselves, because someone's either going to get screwed or punched in that situation.
That would be my answer, would be that this is something that the venue needs to take care of and the venue needs to crack down on. You can't expect, in the example you gave just before this about the very large man standing in front of somebody, you don't even know these days whether someone might have a gun. Might want to turn it into a fist fight. You don't want that. It's up to the venue to handle the situation. And I think if everyone's standing, fine. Okay, everyone's standing. But if there are a few jerks standing up, the venue ought to have ushers coming down and tell people to sit down or kick them out.
Let me just read one other story, because I watched something like this happen myself. A person next to my sister-in-law, no dancing or singing the whole concert. A person next to my sister-in-law stood, no dancing or singing the whole concert. Even when she stood, she couldn't see around him. So somebody's standing in front of you and you can't see around this guy. No one else in the entire section was standing but this one person. Many other people were blocked by him and asked him to sit down. The security guards would not help. Well, I asked him nicely to sit, and I even offered to buy him a beverage, and he completely ignored us. The irony was, his date sat the whole time. That's what I saw, too, that the guy was standing, and the woman, or was it the woman was standing and the guy, but the couple, one of them was, like, if not embarrassed, mortified, but they weren't going to be able to do anything about it. So the one of the couple sits, the other one annoys everybody. And if you're the sitting member of that team, now you can feel the people behind you, and you've got this bozo's dancing next to you, and he's your ride, for crying out loud. That's, nobody wins in that situation, Eric.
Well, what do you do with just belligerent, rude people in general? I mean, this is just a microcosm of a larger problem.
Yeah.
People who are too loud in restaurants, people who are otherwise annoying on the sidewalk or on public transit. The temptation to intervene is strong, but also the fear that these things can escalate so quickly. You think, you could go and tap the guy on the shoulder, he could turn around and clock you. So it's, I think the security guard in that situation that you just described was totally wrong, and the venue is totally wrong, and that the customers ought to take it up with the venue afterwards and go say, hey, you know, this is, we paid good money for these tickets. We couldn't see the stage. That's on the venue.
Eric Zorn's the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly newsletter. He'll sign you up for free if you email ericzorn@gmail.com. One last note about this, Eric, then I want to talk about your newsletter this week, your Substack. But when I was at the Eagles concert last year, the ushers had pinpoint flashlights, and they would stand off to the side, but in front of the standers, and they would shine the lights in their eyes and sort of drill them back down to their seats. And that worked until they turned their backs, and then the people would stand back up again. But they were belligerently, or very specifically, going right up to the people that were standing, and they just shined a light right in their eyes. How about that, Eric?
I like it. I like
I do
it.
Too. Speaking of behavior in public, what's your problem with the Masters? I thought everybody loved the Masters this year.
I love the Masters tournament. It was the greatest, one of the greatest golf tournaments I've ever seen, where, you know, Rory McIlroy seemed to be cruising to victory, and then suddenly he falls apart, and Justin Rose streaks back and takes the lead momentarily. And then, I mean, this is all on the second nine. They don't call it the back nine. That's all the second nine. On the Masters, and then Rory McIlroy wins with a clutch wedge and a nice little putt on the first sudden death hole. So it was one of the greatest golf tournaments I've ever seen. But what I noticed was that the announcers on the telecast are not allowed to refer to the fans or the gallery. They must refer to them as patrons. This is the only golf tournament where you'll hear the announcers refer to the fans as patrons. And this is apparently because the insufferable prigs who run Augusta National Golf Club, where this tournament is held every year, believe that the word fan comes from fanatics, and they feel that their fans, that the people who come to the tournament are not fanatics. And they have a bunch of other rules that are very noticeable once you know the rules. You notice what they're referring to. Now, in golf, when you're not on the fairway, you're in the grass. It's a little bit longer on the sides of the fairway, and that's traditionally called the rough. But the people at the Masters said TV announcers can't call it rough. They have to call it the second cut. Most time, you know, the big obstacles that are filled with sand are often called sand traps. But you're not allowed to call them sand traps on the CBS telecast. You have to call them bunkers, which is another word for it. But the fact that they are rigid about this, don't call them traps, call them bunkers. I referred to the back nine. Traditionally in golf, you play it's 18 holes, you play the first nine holes, that's the front nine, and then the second nine holes is the back nine. For some reason, the reason given, they don't like to call it the back nine because they think it sounds too much like backside, which makes you think the human posterior, I guess. So they want you to call it the second nine. And if you listen for it, which I did this, I was aware of these rules. I read up on them last week. I was watching the telecast. And sure enough, these announcers, these obsequious CBS announcers, are going along with these dumb rules. Next rule is they can't call it the driving range. And that's where the golfers go to practice before the match. And then if they're still in the hunt for the playoff, they'll go afterwards to the driving range where you hit balls. But this is to be called the tournament practice area.
Answer me this, Eric. So if back nine is unfortunate, and maybe rough sounds rough and fan sounds like fanatical, you know, these are all leaps of the imagination, but okay, fine. What's the problem with driving range? I wonder what the reference is that could be construed as inappropriate or unfortunate.
I have no idea. Range maybe sounds like a gun facility. I'm not sure. Well, here's a better one. I think the golfers go off in groups of three at the beginning of the week, and then they go off in twos for the final rounds. And they insist that you not call it a twosome; they call it a pairing. The reason is they don't want early in the week to refer to threesomes, because a threesome for them recall something unwholesome. And finally, the fourth round of the Masters is to be called the final round and not the fourth round.
Well, what happens if they slip? What if they say, screw it, I'm a professional broadcaster, I'm going to say it anyway?
They get banned from covering the tournament. The Augusta National Golf Club tells CBS they can't have these announcers. It's happened to two announcers. It happened to Jack Whitaker on CBS, if you remember him. He was banned for once referring to the gallery as a mob, for the patrons, sorry, as they were moving in around the green on the 18th. He said, and the mob is gathering around the green. The mob was considered to be extremely undignified. Jack Whitaker was banned from the Masters telecast for the rest of his career. Gary McCord was banned permanently for saying they don't cut the greens here at Augusta. They use bikini wax, and because the greens there are extremely slippery.
That's funny. I just laughed when you said that.
And it was funny. And on the air, they laughed, but the people watching at home from the Augusta National Golf Club did not laugh. And Gary McCord was banned. So if you don't follow these rules, and it reminds me a lot of the Seinfeld soup Nazi, right, where you have to say the exact right words at the exact right time, or you don't get your soup. You know, no soup for you. Well, this is no Masters for you if you say back nine instead of second nine. So
Eric Zorn is paying attention to the Masters. He's also paying attention to what Harvard is doing today, or not doing. Eric, about your thoughts about the Masters golf announcers. Eric, it's called tradition. It's what separates the Masters from other tournaments. 815, those golf rules are ridiculous. And 630 reminded us that yet an amateur golfer playing in the tournament peed in the creek in front of everyone, and he wasn't terminated from the tournament. Yeah, I heard about that, Eric.
I didn't hear about that.
He thought it'd be a long walk back to the outhouse, and nobody was kind of looking, or maybe they were looking, but he went over and twinkled in the pond, and they still let him play. Okay, let's move on to what Harvard is and is not doing. They're another one of the targeted universities. What's the story? What's your headline about that?
Well, the Trump administration has been trying to crack down on universities in general, Northwestern, Harvard, Princeton, these places where they've had pro-Palestinian protests. And they want to crack down on them, and they want them to institute a bunch of new rules, banning face masks for the purpose of concealing your identity during protests, to bar protests inside academic buildings. And they also want them to review how Middle Eastern studies programs are administered, make sure they expand intellectual diversity by adding things, adding faculty to the Institute for Israel and Jewish Studies departments and things like that. They're trying to sort of micromanage these institutions. And I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not exactly sure where the political motivation is coming from, but they're really cracking down. They've taken away $2.2 billion from Harvard. This is a problem for Harvard, even though Harvard's got an endowment of something like $53 billion. So they can absorb the loss right now. And so Harvard is up on its back legs, and Yale is standing with them. Princeton and Columbia have buckled under, but this is a very authoritarian move on the administration's part. They're trying to in the name of protecting Jewish students, they are really clamping down on the free speech rights of these protesters. And again, I wouldn't begin to think this is an issue of taking sides in these protests. I think that some of the things that the protesters have said to Jewish students and done to Jewish students is deplorable. And I think the university should crack down on that. But for the federal government to take away money from necessary research and things like that for the purposes of making a point about how these institutions are handling protests is very ominous. And I worry that if these institutions and these universities don't stand up to this, which, again, Harvard is doing, and it's very important that they're doing it, but other institutions, I think, can't. And it'll be interesting to see what, say, Northwestern does, because they've already removed some of their DEI materials from their websites. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that giving in to a bully, you think the bully's going to stop, but the bully is never going to stop. So it's a very delicate moment that we're at right now.
The thought leader on this movement is a activist that was on the Daily podcast by the New York Times this week. And among other things, he made the point that these institutions are very left-leaning, and that while we talk about freedom of expression and voice and opinions and thoughts, things that should happen on college campuses, they don't tolerate much right side thinking and speech and speakers. And it's a whole raft of things that come out of these institutions that then inform politicians and laws and the public in general. And there we are pumping tax dollars into institutions that are influencing people who, in fact, maybe didn't, you know, the electorate, the American populace, and yet more people voted for Donald Trump than, say, Kamala Harris. So it's a little backwards in the way we're spending our money. And the point this guy also made was you don't have to take the money, but if you do, there's a social compact there that you'll maybe be respectful of both sides of the political aisle. It's not exactly that, but Eric, in general, what's your response to that?
Well, there's a good point about the way speech is policed on college campuses, that people from the right, from the conservative point of view, are not given the kind of platforms, are not allowed to have the kind of platforms that people on the left are allowed to have. That is a problem, and I think it's sort of a separate problem from this idea of the pro-Palestinian protesters. But yeah, I mean, the guy makes a good point, and I've been out front on this idea that free speech means free speech. But if free speech means free speech, if you're campaigning on free speech, if you're promoting that, then you've got to say, well, then the people who are pro-Palestinian need to have free speech, and you can't just take someone who is expressing pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel sentiments and kick them out of the country for that reason. I mean, I believe in allowing people to speak. I believe in allowing people, especially in front of willing listeners. I think if you have a forum on a campus.
Well, but you're not advocating hate speech, are you?
No, I'm not. But I don't think it's. I don't think that most of the pro-Palestinian protests have been hate speech. I mean, I think they're objecting quite strongly to the way the Israelis have conducted their campaign.
Well, there were signs in speech. I mean, you know, I can make the case that there was plenty of hate speech directed directly at Jewish students at the universities were on their back legs trying to address that. They should have been more proactive about that. No?
Well, yeah, they should have been, but where do you draw the line when you're talking about someone who's like anti-Zion?
I don't think this is appropriate punishment for that. I mean, so as a result, we're going to cancel cancer research? I can't understand that. Let me read to you what Donald Trump just tweeted a couple of hours ago. Perhaps Harvard should lose its tax-exempt status and be taxed as a political entity if it keeps pushing political, ideological, and terrorist-inspired sickness. Remember, tax-exempt status is totally contingent on acting in the public interest. Now, that's the president today. Give me 14 more seconds on that, Eric.
I'd like to see him apply that same standard to a lot of American churches that are highly active in their political leanings and their political activities as well. So yeah, I mean, I think that there is a point to be made about making sure that people have the right to speak and policing hate speech, actual hate speech, but to make sure that we draw the line about hate speech in a sensible place.
Eric Zorn publishes the Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com to get a free copy. Give him a little money. He'll give you the premium edition. And we'll talk to you on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow.
Look forward to it. Thanks.
That's Eric Zorn, along with some other smart folks that joined me, and I just asked the questions.